Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, we just got a little bit of the flu in our house, so dealing with kids throwing up here, there, and everywhere. And yeah, the weather's getting cold again, which is kind of weird because it's been so warm and like it's springtime, so you'd expect it to just stay warm, and now it's getting cold and rainy again. So yeah, things are going all right.
Cool. Yeah, I just got back from, I guess, spring break. Kids had off and we were in Florida for a week. So,
nice.
Yeah, it was fun. We drive. I don't know why. We could probably afford to fly, but we're kind of either gluttons for punishment or I think we're just a little old school, me and my wife. So it's sort of just like, we're not that fancy, and we'll take the time to drive. And there's, I don't know, a certain amount of grit built into the kids when you just have to like be bored and occupy yourselves and do things.
Yeah, builds character.
That's what my parents told me. So, but no, I do think there is like, it's easy to see on the flip side of like, you know, maybe their peers or like people flying places or people getting infinite screen time, all these other things that it's easy as a parent these days to kind of maybe one, have a reaction to the way your childhood was and not want to make, you know, oh, I hated long car rides, so I'm never going to make my kids do that. Like, so I think there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions that people have. And my personal view is I think that like hurts some kids growing up because they don't get to experience. Not that everyone should have like massive pain. There's like a difference between like suffering and pain and like grit. But anyway,
yes,
a little tangent.
So. Yeah, well, I'm right there with you. I think a little bit of pain is good for us, and you know, as long as we're there to support our kids when they're going through that and kind of help them through, as opposed to just being like, see you later, right? Makes all the difference, I think.
So cool.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, so we're on our, you know, we have these cycles in Searching for SaaS podcast where, you know, we're like super excited about some new idea or like in the middle of executing. And right now is kind of a reflective time for me. I've been looking at testing Taxi. I kind of let it run for a month and just to see where it would go. And I did some things with Statusless to try and get a lifetime deal going there. And just feel like I'm spinning my wheels on these things. And so I'm just trying to, you know, take stock of kind of where I've been and what's going on and to try and, is there things I'm misunderstanding? Is there things I'm skipping? Or, just trying to figure out what's going on and what I can do about it. So that's kind of where my head's at. And I was hoping maybe we could talk through some of that today.
Sure. I mean, personally, I kind of like where you're at, not for the fact that like you're not getting traction, not that, but I think we've talked a little bit about this in the past, but you almost have like two ends of the spectrum of types of startups, right? Like testing Taxi is for listeners, like I think at this point we'll just say it helps manual testers, right? Mm-hmm. And it helps like quality assurance with testing software and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about that side of the spectrum is it's sort of new, like it's not an established like buying pattern for some of the things that you're trying to angle towards. But I still think there's something there. You just haven't figured out how to actually turn it into a business, right? It's solving a problem, but we've realized there's like patterns and habits to build around that first, right? That aren't necessarily native. It's sort of a thing people are doing, but not necessarily like easily identifiable and easily repeatable type of thing. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have Statusless, which is a very well-known like uptime monitoring, right? Very clear established market, very clear buying patterns, very clear ways. So you have these like balance of this two new sort of edge or more on the edge of some innovation and some habits, and but without a business model. This other one with a very well established model, but yet hard to stand out as well. So,
Yeah. So I'm like basically have one foot on each side of the spectrum, and it's like both the worst place to be in. It's like, hey, Nate, you should go build something, you know, just kind of aim in that general direction. I'm like, sure, let me go for both of the bad sides of it. Let's see how it goes.
Can I just average out in the middle and then I'll be good, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe that'll be the next thing, right? So yeah, I guess I've been thinking about like, what kind of, if I did miss something, like I think especially with testing taxi, maybe to kind of tackle that one first. I think you're right. It is this kind of new buying pattern. Like whenever I'm talking to people about it, it's not something that they're replacing. It's not something that they're used to buying. It's kind of novel. And so there seems to be a real difficulty finding a budget for it. Like they do have a budget for tools, these people. But they really allocate that towards, you know, test management tools or, towards kind of known things like, maybe device emulation or something like that. And so really like, yeah, having a hard time finding anyone that has a budget allocated to it. And, there's kind of an excitement for it. People instantly, when you tell them and show them, they're excited and they're like, oh, I'm going to use this every day. And then the behavior pattern is they don't. And even with some encouragement, you know, with some email follow-ups and transactional things, still doesn't seem to be something that I've been able to, you know, transfer into a habit. And so just kind of thinking that through, like, I wonder if those are things I could have caught earlier. And I'm not really sure exactly how I could have done that. And maybe you have some thoughts on that. Just like I right away kind of, I told people the idea, people were excited, and then I built. And, you know, maybe I could have avoided building somehow. I don't know.
I don't know if you could have. Like, I feel like this, the challenge with this is you don't know where you are in the time spectrum of this market. Is this going to be a thing? Is this that interesting? Like, you knew there was enough general interest in the problem you were trying to solve. So there is, like, a real problem to solve. But is it something that has enough value to kind of take out their wallet, right? Does it have enough inertia to get over that hump that someone's going to get a budget for? Or maybe they have to make a choice between one other tool and your tool, right? Like, it's like, which one, where do I put my chips, right? So I don't know if there's any way you could have found that out, found any of this out without actually having something tactile in their hand. The challenge is, again, you don't know how far this goes, right? Like, maybe it's like, you know, how different universes could play out for this. You know, if you keep working on it or keep iterating, or you find the right user that has the right insight, and then all of a sudden it's like that's it. That's the unlock, right? So I don't think taking a step back in time, trying to save you time, because you don't know what the end is. It's one thing where you knew where the end was, is like, could I have gotten here faster, right? Just right now, we just don't know where the end is. So we don't know like what, if there was anything to course correct.
Yeah. And I guess, but I something that kind of stands out to me though, is that this really is a new type of product for this market.
Right.
And I think I did overlook that. I think I oversimplified what I was seeing, where there were people using different tools, but those tools were actually in a very narrow column. Like, they all were very closely tied to test management or, you know, specific releases, or they were tied to, it was really about linking to test cases. And I feel like if I went out and built a test case manager, I could probably have a shot at that. I could probably do something like, just like Status List, where it's like, you know, you're competing for a commodity sort of deal. And maybe there's some other, you know, complications there. But I think this whole like being in a new product area, I think is, I think there's more risk there than I thought.
Okay. Are there any, here's another question aside from the whole building out a whole test suite management.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Are there like, could you plug into one of these other ones? Could you be like an add-on to one of these things? Could you, you know, sort of, you think about app marketplaces and whatnot. So you might have a big whale that has something. So if you go in and you're like, hey, we integrate, we make XYZ easier within this test management suite, or it plugs right into, you know, ABC or XYZ or something like that. Is there, you know, is there that type of thing? I mean, I don't know if we're in that. That's the other question. Are we in this mode now of, okay, what can you make of this? Right. Mm-hmm. And is that the determination that it is the test suite thing? Or one of the things we've talked about in the past, is this just about a matter of time? And like, are there the innovations you can do in this space? Are there these little patterns that start to unlock more habitual usage? Right. Mm. And we don't know what those are yet. I don't know. And I think that's what got you here. It was like this raw excitement of like solving this problem, having users being excited. And now you're just seeing like, is there enough runway there for them to get usage, or is it something else? So that's the neat thing about this, is you're sort of on the more of the edge of habits and innovation on this. And the nice thing is if you find something, you're the only one in that territory. Right. And, but on the flip side of the other one with the, you said like building a test suite, which we can mark off right now, is probably not necessarily a thing, but who knows? Like, that's also that magical advantage where you have the two things. You have an established category that people pay for. Mm-hmm. And if you were to build out something, that's what becomes disruptive. That's what becomes like that piece of standing out in a commodity, in an area where, like we've talked about, you know, seven powers and things like that, like in something that one of these existing test suite companies isn't going to move fast enough to do, or just doesn't have enough time and research, or doesn't have conviction in that, or they don't see it as a threat, right? So that's where you have a point of view on it, and if you're approaching testing from a different way, like, does that affect that, right? Does it help? Or the other one is like, what leads people to buy test suites, right? And maybe you're not building a competitive test suite, but if you have a different point of view on approach of like, hey, testing should start from the end user up, not necessarily top down. Like, test suites are for managers. Like, this is for like QA people, and this is for QA people to share with developers. Like, look at what Figma did, right? Like, Figma's big thing was like making the design process more collaborative. Maybe there's a thing that, how can you make testing more collaborative? So maybe it builds more of like community and like within a company of like sharing tests. Like, how, it's not easy to share tests. Or at least I don't think it is, but maybe there's a different angle and a different point of view, and it's super lightweight on what are the typical like test management areas. But either way, where it starts is like, what can you lean into as the habits? And are you even interested in it anymore? That's the other question. Like, cause this is a not, don't know the end of this journey. Like, you could just keep chipping away, or maybe it's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to dedicate a couple days a month to it and just sort of like let my brain just sit with it. Right. Don't be in action mode of like, I need to do like, you know, 10 things a week on this, because sometimes the best ideas come from inspiration of other things I see, but it happens over time. It doesn't happen when I lock myself in a room and say, come up with the best new idea in an hour. It's more of like, okay, if I know I'm only working on it once a month, I kind of just start a catalog of stuff, and then it's just sort of in the background spinning. And that's when I come up with better ideas.
I think you're right. Like, I think I also come up with better ideas that way, where it's like kind of on the back burner. You kind of have it, has time to percolate. You don't feel the crunch. You're not just ruminating on it all the time. I think that is definitely a better way to kind of work at some of these things. I think like if testing taxi were to become, like, if I was going to keep chipping at it, I think the path forward would be to find some existing software like test case management or something like that, that is a known solution, and just to have a different take on it. Because I think that is just looking at how I've been able to innovate on some things. I think often I take like five steps instead of one step, because I'm like, well, it's more efficient to take the five steps because, you know, just get there faster. And like, other people don't get it yet, or, you know, there's not room there for that give and take that has to happen between these early adopters. It's kind of an all or nothing, or it's kind of like, well, what is that? And so if I can be closer to like a known thing, but still have some way to differentiate and kind of sell this, like kind of have Testing Taxi under that umbrella as like a value add or something, or maybe it's like pivotal to how it works, that would be, you know, kind of a path forward for that.
Yeah. So I like that, because I think the five steps is, especially in this, if you're thinking so early, taking five steps very early on, all of a sudden it's like you're off the path very quickly, right? And you don't, again, that's the problem, is you don't know what the path is. Yes, it might be more efficient to take five steps, but it's also obviously less efficient to take five steps in the wrong direction versus one or two steps, yeah. Right? To sort of like wait and see and like, where's this going? Is this enough? Okay. It didn't make a difference anymore. I could take another few steps. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think that also makes sense too, because like, there's a lot of effort that has to go into education when you take five steps, right? Where you're trying to train people on why this is the better way. And if you just have one minor thing to kind of quibble over as to why yours is better, I think that goes a lot further. Like, I just imagine, like, if someone like, you know, GitHub or something like that, or Browser Stack or something, decided to build into my space, you know, into more of the manual tester tools area, that it would be a lot easier for me, actually. Even though I'd be competing with them, it would be a lot easier because I could make, you know, small incremental improvements on what they've got, or like slightly differentiate myself, and I could ride on their tails. And, you know, they could do all the work of changing the market.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting way to think about it too. And I'm wondering now, once you mentioned like the five steps, and I don't know what you mean specifically by the five steps, but I'm also thinking about early on, before you even built the browser stuff, you're working on like basically like autonomous test automation, right? Like more of the stuff that's crawling and doing things for you without any manual intervention, right? So like, that's where you started.
Yeah.
But you also started with this grandiose, like, hey, like, what if you didn't, what if this thing just did for you? And then you started, then you went this other side, which was like, okay, well, what is the manual tester doing? Like, and almost when you say the five steps, it's almost like, were you basically just trying to get the manual tester to get to the point where you started, like where they're using this thing? And I know that's also part of where you were placing like pay options and other things. Like, I want to get them to automation, but I know they're starting here. The challenge is you don't know how wide that gap is or the distance between. And those are the quote unquote five steps, right? Like, and are they, is there even a path there? Right. Like, and that's what we didn't know yet, right? So, and it's almost like, I like the part of, again, the what you're finding with the individual testers, and it's like you don't know how many iterations or paths or steps there are to be there. But also, that's the point. If I don't even think about a destination in mind, then let's see where they want to go, where they're naturally gonna kind of walk, and where they need help. And if that's more of like a bottoms up from that manual tester. Versus like the top down of the automation, and you're trying to find the connective points in between, but that's all like new territory. We don't know. There might be mountains that you can't even climb between the two.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I started with six steps ahead, and I went back to maybe five steps ahead. Like, that was kind of the pivot, right?
Right.
And kind of what I mean by like the five steps is like, well, if we have AI, if we have, you know, people that need to test things and they want to test efficiently and quickly, and if you care about, you know, getting good coverage and reasonable amount of time, then you must want to be like a superhuman robot. And so let me give you the tool to be a superhuman robot. And it's like, well, that was like five things in a row. Let's just maybe take one of those things and kind of take a, you know, a way to riff on that as a way for people right. to have improvement. I think there's also another part that I overlooked with this too, where yes, I am focused on helping the tester, but the people that are in management are really the ones that are controlling the budgets for this. And a lot of testers actually conflict with the opinions of management on that, where, you know, they would like more time, they would like this, that, and the other thing. And so just paying attention to the tester and just serving them actually probably won't work either. There has to be some sort of middle ground as to making both of those people happy.
Right. Yeah, so, I see your point. That was something you didn't know about, that tension between, or that difference in alignment. Because what's interesting is when you were talking about like the tester stuff and the superpowers and stuff, it made me think of like superhuman, you know, the ones that do all the, like the email. It never made sense to me because I don't, like personally, I don't spend a ton of time in email, but there, I know there are people that do. There are people that live and breathe through email. And those patterns, what they needed these shortcuts, these things that to me, like, I was like, I don't use keyboard shortcuts for that. I use it for other things, but they also could pay for it themselves, right? It was so painful to them and paying whatever, $50 a month, and then needing to be onboarded in a certain way of how to use the thing. They need to be onboarded to teach themselves how to do it. But they also had the wherewithal and the budget to say like, yeah, paying $50 a month, like this is worth it to me right now. I don't know how many testers out there there are that could fit that model or willing to pay that for themselves.
Yeah.
Versus like having to go up the budget chain, right? Because the reality is if it saves them time, like, you know, and helps them do their job better, are they willing to pay for this? Or are they that type of person that is like, you know, they just don't care, right? Like, it's like, whether this, if this takes me 5 hours to do, or if it takes me 1 hour to do with this other tool, like,
yeah, they don't actually care.
Maybe they don't care. I don't know. Like, are they, what's going to happen if I do more of it? I just get more testing to do. So does it really matter? I mean, I don't want to pigeonhole their jobs or how they feel about it, but I know there are certain people that just like to kind of, they like to clock in and clock out, and it's sort of like, you know, machine, it's not going to make much of a difference how they, if they are, not that they don't take pride in their work, but in terms of the time it takes them.
They're content with it, and that is not a pain point for them, the amount of time. Because like a lot of these manual testers, that is their day to day is just, they're going to go through this application and they're going to test it. And, you know, if it takes them 2 hours or if it takes them 5 hours, it's, you know, whatever, they'll go around the cycle again and test new things. And a lot of them care about getting deeper. And that was really what a lot of the testing taxi features were focused on, just like getting deeper in and, you know, doing a more thorough job. It doesn't seem to be a big enough pain point to really make movement on.
Right, like they're just not intrinsically motivated to go faster. And, you know, some people are interested in going further, but is really that beneficial for them to go two times faster? Let's just arguably say. Like the email one, you know, let's say it's a salesperson. Yes, it is. Like I can actually reply to more people in shorter time and make more money out of a sales commission, or I can stay on top of this, or I can get in and out of my email faster. Then I can spend more time on the other things that maybe the deep work that I enjoy and the work that is more like impactful and can show, you know, me to get a raise or some other, you know, actual benefits to myself, or spend more time with my family because now email takes me, you know, 1/10 the time it used to with all these like shortcut keys and everything. And I can still stay on top of my correspondence. Right. So.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I think I maybe have gotten this wrong before, where just trying to target people and trying to understand their motivations a lot of people actually aren't motivated to change to a more efficient way just because a more efficient way exists. Like I think of like the hardware store owners when I was trying to sell them on prices, like I was trying to give them pricing data.
Oh yeah. I remember that.
They didn't actually want the pricing data. They just wanted to feel like they knew what their, you know, customer or their store down the street was up to. And they just wanted the feeling. They didn't actually want to have, you know, the comparisons and all of that. I think that is an area of weakness for myself. Like I always look for the more efficient way to do things. And so like, I just have to remember that not everyone is like that. Yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't call it a weakness. I would just call it it's actually a strength when you're an engineer, right? So, and whatnot. So I wouldn't consider it a weakness. I would just consider it like a observable blind spot, right? And I think we all do this. I think everyone does this. It's not you that's unique to it. Everyone defaults to themselves as thinking everyone thinks like them, right? Mm. So, and I've definitely done tons of this myself too. And one of the things that's funny is I have it written down. I don't know when I wrote it down, but it was probably at least within the past couple of years. But I'm just like, it was essentially just like, just assume I'm the weird one. And I honestly, most times I am, which is okay. Mm-hmm. Right. But once I kind of got wrapped my head around that, it's just like my default assumption should be I'm the weird one.
Right.
Now I can guess at what other people, but don't guess based on how I feel. Like I remember listening to a podcast of someone breaking down some landing pages, and he was talking about like, you know, he's like, here's some common fallacies people put on these, especially like engineers and stuff like that. You want to put like, oh, it's, you know, look at all this attribution, look at all the data, like Referrock does all these great reports and like tracking, like this super in-depth tracking to know, you know, the impact of your referral program aside from just the referrals, like get all the impressions and the visitors and really know how many people you're reaching. Like, and it's not that that isn't valuable. But leading with that, I'm proud and I'm excited about it. But most people like don't care about the data. Like most people don't like honestly, or like you talk about data and graphs and charts and spreadsheets. It's like they're actually more anxious and actually want to like stand back and get away. It's just like now you're poking on a thing where people. Don't enjoy math. Don't enjoy the data. Don't enjoy digging into the statistics. Don't enjoy any of that stuff. So the more you front load that, the more they go, I mean, this isn't for me, right? So, but it's like, okay. And like, who are our core customers? And I go looking through our set of customers. I'm like, oh yeah, these are, you know, it might be a pest control company, a car dealership. It might be a SaaS company. It might be those other ones, but across the board. And it might be a SaaS person that's in marketing, but not every marketer is data driven. So it's almost like, okay, if I'm sitting there front loading with all this, hey, we do all this tracking, like, it didn't actually hit for anyone or most people.
Well, yeah, I think you got to think about it too, of like, what if, like, imagine somebody's boss came to them and said, you have to set up a referral program, go. It's like, you know, what does that person want to hear and like need to hear? And probably a lot of it has to do with like, we're going to take care of you. And like, this program is solid. Like, we know what we're doing, and like, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna be all right.
Do we trust? Am I gonna make it easy for that person? Like, and that's where the stuff that does make sense. It's like, hey, we have this onboarding, we have this free onboarding, and we give you advice and stuff. And that's the stuff that people click on, and that's the stuff that actually raises the conversion rates, right? And is the pricing fair? Is it gonna? Am I gonna all of a sudden feel like I'm getting, you know, I got the wool pulled over my eyes, stuff like that.
Yeah. It's interesting how a lot of these, you almost have to kind of be in an environment where you see these things happening to think of some of these like ways of thinking. Like I've got one client that's pretty large, and you know, the boss will say, I want this to happen yesterday. And like, you see these things play out, you see people verbalize these different things. And like, I feel like you kind of get some muscle memory on that after a while of just, you know, how a lot of people think about, you know, their job and, you know, purchasing software and, you know, searching for results and things like that. Just from, you just you know, watching how other people do it. Because I think when you're, you know, by yourself, like if you're working remote or if you're, working by yourself or something like that, you don't always get exposed to that quite as much. At least that's been my experience. And I think there's something really beneficial to that.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of my TLDR tip for that part, is just like, assume you're weird. Assume even just like, assume but you have to start somewhere. So you start with the whole idea is like, hey, do testers want to get better? And that's probably in that customer research and really trying to get to the nuanced motivations of like, well, how do people buy in your things? Like, what happens if you want to buy software? Like, if those are really the questions, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. I'm digging
it's funny. It's like, it makes me want to almost go back and look at, you know, books like Michelle Hansen's book and things like that, and like look at the sets of questions of like, oh, actually, yeah, I skipped that one, but that actually could have been saved me here.
Yeah. But I think a lot of it, I think, is really challenging your own assumptions and not being too like rose colored glasses on everything, right? Like, you have to have some optimism that it's going to work. But you also, like, I think to really like give a hard shake at what things you're assuming to be true and making sure you're proving them in some level, I think could probably save a lot of these roads and empty pathways.
That's where like it's a good segue into like picking a established pattern commodity business, which is like where we talked about status lists, where we've talked about like email marketing, where we've talked about like, if you look at a list of a bunch of indie hackers that are successful, most of them aren't doing anything innovative. Like, it's all, most of it is just very like, hey, it's a job board. Hey, it's another project management tool. Hey, it's like another form software. It's a uptime monitor software. That's really like, those are the things that you could probably skip the customer research, because there are patterns there, right? Like, even if you do have a me too with a little nuanced difference, kind of brings us back to status list a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's interesting, because I've often observed like physical businesses, like if you had like a painting company or a roofing company or something like that, you almost can't screw it up. Like in the sense of like, if you go and do a good job at whatever the thing is, you're pretty much guaranteed to get some percent of the market. You know, maybe it'll be a small sliver because it's so competitive, but you can probably make a go at it. And not to say it'll be easy, but like, it's doable, right? You know, there's cheese down that tunnel, because look at all these people that have been doing this and it's an established pattern. We all know that there are painting companies, right?
Right.
And I think, yeah, it's like, with software, it gets to be a little bit tricky, because you won't want to be into like a something that's declining in like usage. Like, for example, I think uptime monitoring might be something that's declining with the, you know, the kind of improvements in alerting and platform management and stuff like that. But yeah, it's still like, uptime monitoring is a known category, and you know, so off you go and try that. Well, I think that's pretty good for one episode, unless you've got some more comments.
I mean, the only thing I'd say is, if you recall, I don't know what episode number it was, but we did talk about like what excites you about this type of stuff. I mean, if you go back and think about it, like the testing taxi did still check those marks, where you like working on new tech, right? You cared less about, like, kind of almost like, I would say, like wasted motions down that tunnel. Like, so, you know, you're not upset about this at this point. Like, okay, I'm back here again, but you know, that's kind of but part of that was like, and I think I pushed you on that before, and I'm like, okay, really? Like, you just, you're okay with like,
maybe like,
I wouldn't say with waste, but wasting time down these tech tunnels. Mm. And you're like, yeah. Like, it just didn't bother you. It didn't bother you as much as it would bother me, right? Like,
I guess what I'm saying now is that I think I've
maybe it's starting to bother you.
it's starting to bother me a little bit, in the sense of like, I don't know. I want something that's going to go, and like, I've seen the kind of responses to different things. Like, I've seen how my marketing outreach like has certain effects with testing taxi. I've seen how like getting on customer calls can really make a difference. I've seen like with with status list, how just incremental month over month growth is just amazing.
Right.
And so I think I'm kind of like, yeah, if just like right now here today, I'm feeling like, hey, it would be kind of nice to just, you know, maybe maybe tackle some boring type of software just right. so that it will go and you can, you know, kind of try the next level of difficulty on this. See okay. what I think next week, but.
Yeah, I still like this. I think this position you're in, and maybe we can workshop some of the statusless stuff again. I still like that. That it's kind of neat seeing that you have maybe neat to me because I don't have a real stake, but seeing your foot on both sides, like we could pull on one, you could still kind of like see what happens iteratively with testing taxi because I think like there's still. I don't know. There's still something there. I don't know. Maybe I don't know enough about it, but I still feel like there's something to unlock there that could be really interesting. But and on the testing tax on the statusless side, it's like there's nothing really new to unlock. It's just more like marketing exploration, pricing exploration, positioning, advertising, whatever those are, trying to make those unit economics work. So I wouldn't be enthused at this point of like, you know, obviously jumping off on anything new. And I think it's sort of just like, hey, you know, what can you like, let's pull on both of these threads a little bit. And it's like, you're spending more time learning, you know, marketing and ads and copywriting and all these other little things we can with status list. And then also just like innovation and research and what other usability, what other stuff can you get to like, hook in and get engagement within, you know, within testing taxi. I don't know. We can talk more about it later, but I'm not sad about your spot, but I think because there's like different fun things to do on different like spectrums, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. I think I'm a little tired of it now working with testing taxi though.
Okay. Okay. I get that. Yeah. Cool. All right.
All right. Sounds good, man. Thanks, Josh.
We'll talk later. Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.